Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network, where you can find on Facebook by going into the chat engine, not the chat engine, but the search engine, and put in Patriot Journalist Network, and just put that in as one word, and you will be able to find the link to the show where you will see, or I'm sorry, I'll take you to the link for the show, including this one, and also you will find there Charlotte Dively's Pray USA, and you'll also see Mark Prasik's show, which is live video chat, which his show is from 8 p.m. till midnight, and all these times are Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Time, I should say. And also, following this show, as part of the conservative conversation, you will find on Blog Talk Radio the Samuel Sanford Show, which is Constitutional Conservative Unite, and that is from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And then you can also find, and that's every night, and you can also find the Tex and Rex Show, which is on at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday and Saturday evenings. Now, for the folks who are new to the show, and if you stay on and listen to the show and like what you hear, you're welcome to follow the show, and which is easy. You just go to the homepage of Bard's Logic Political Talk, in which you can just hit the little follow button underneath the show's icon, and I would really appreciate it. And also, you will find on the homepage of Bard's Logic Political Talk on Blog Talk Radio a link to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which has some more links and some videos and things of that nature, some information about who our featured, our past and future featured guests have been on the show. Now, of course, we all know what today is. Today is the 11th anniversary of the worst attack on the American mainland soil, and of course, we are talking about the attack on the Twin Towers in New York on 9/11/2001. And what I'd like to do right now is just take a few moments of silence so that we can ponder and meditate on some thoughts of that day and just briefly on how that affected our lives. And I know our hearts and our thoughts go out to the folks who have been personally affected by the day. Of course, we all have, but no, not any more than the folks who had family or friends or people they knew that were taken that day. And our thoughts go out to those folks, especially on this day. Now, tonight we will discuss the global and political consequences of the attack of the United States on September 11, 2001. And some of the topics that we will discuss will be the Bush presidency, the NDAA, the Patriot Act, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the clash of civilizations, and if we have time, we'll touch on more subjects. Now, I do see the couple folks in the queue waiting to come on, but before I let them on, I know one of them is Chris from Bard's Logic Political Talk panel, but before I let them both in, I would like to play this audio that I am sure everyone in the audience will be familiar with.
Thank you all. I want you all to know, you can't go any louder. I want you all to know that America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you! I can hear you! The rest of the world hears you, and the people down will hear all of us soon.
USA! 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 USA!
thank you for your hard work. Thank you for making the nation proud. And may God bless America.
Okay, folks, and at this time, I will be bringing in Chris, and then I will also be bringing in 832. But if, Chris, you'd like to chime in and then on your thoughts, and then 832, you go after Chris, and we will go from there. So I'm opening up the gentleman's mic. Chris, go ahead, and then 832.
Sorry, Robert. Go ahead and have 832 go.
I'm working
on something. I'll be right back.
Sure. Okay. Well, 832, tell us your name, where you're from, and what's on your mind tonight.
Yeah, it's Gene. And, Chris, I'm going to get you for this. I did not want to be the first to go. But, I guess I would start by saying, you know, I'm as patriotic as any American. And, you know, 9/11 was a very unfortunate and, it was a detrimental blow to America. But, and before anyone cuts me off and starts flaming me out, hear me out first. But in my opinion, Osama bin Laden beat us. And here's why I say that. And I know it sounds under-patriotic, but he did what the Japanese couldn't do, what the Koreans couldn't do, the Chinese, the Russians, the Germans. He took away our civil liberties. He took away our very freedom and our security. Just some mere facts of the case. We've imprisoned citizens. Right after 9/11, we had 750 people detained that were in the United States, had done nothing wrong other than just be of Muslim or of Arab descent. Those people were detained anywhere from days to years. Some of them were held for as much as 5 years. That's unheard of in this country.
Weren't some Japanese detained in World War II? Well, I'm sorry for interjecting, Gene, but from my understanding, weren't there Chinese who were interned during World War II?
Japanese,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Chinese. I apologize, thank you.
Some Japanese were detained, but they were not detained for months and years, and they were all represented by attorneys, or, you know, whether it was immigration attorneys or whatever. They were not subject to interrogations and the outright denial of their civil liberties that the Muslims and the Arabs were.
Okay, well, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here for a minute because, you know, I like to have both sides be, you know, looked at. Is one thing that was unprecedented with what happened on 9/11 is this was the first time the homeland itself was under attack. So that's something that was unprecedented.
That's correct.
That
Hawaii
has never happened before.
December 7th. That's right. On December 7th, what about the World Trade Center bombings in, what was it, 89?
But this was, okay, there's a difference between, you know, an attack such as the one that you just spoke of and the multiple coordinated attacks, much like you would see in a war setting. I mean, we talk about pincer moves all the time. Now, if this didn't seem, if the attacks didn't seem like a strategy of war, you know, somewhat like a pincer move, you know, I wouldn't know what other way to describe it in that way. Now, of course, you know, there have been terrorist attacks, you know, before. I agree with that. But, however, there has never been such a coordinated, and, you know, intelligence using attack such as there was on 9/11.
Yeah.
That could be seen as a declaration of war.
I, I can concede to that. Well, I mean, Pearl Harbor, that was very much a declaration of war, but it was one state, multiple islands, where this was multiple states in singular building. So, you know, I'll still concede that this was more orchestrated in the sense that it was more spread out.
Well, maybe my history is not as fuzzy on this, but the attack of Pearl Harbor, was that not done before Hawaii was even yet a state?
Yeah.
So, in actuality, when they attacked Pearl Harbor, they weren't actually attacking. Now, they were, you know, it was United States interest, to be sure, but it wasn't actually, an actual hit, is what I'm trying to say, of U.S., you know,
yeah,
United States soil.
Robert, a military base is U.S. soil.
I was going to say that. But, yes, I understand what you're saying. It was not a state within the boundaries of the United States, and you're correct. But I go back to the bombing of the Twin Towers in New York prior to the airplane crashes. That was an outright offensive. I mean, they had bombs and they blew up the World Trade Centers. The only thing is they just didn't have powerful enough detonation, if I can spit it out, to bring them down. They tried. They knew the target.
No.
They just weren't smart enough to effectively carry it out.
No, and I understand that point, but the point I was making was, as in wartime, like during an actual war event, that's why I bring up a pincer move, but it's where you have attacks coming from different fronts. It was not just New York that was attacked. It was Washington, D.C., and New York. So you had, a coordinated, military maneuver that was, perpetrated, not just a bombing of a singular building. This was something that was orchestrated that's why I use a pincer move, because I think that is a good illustration on what we've seen.
Yes, you're correct. And the fact that it was an offensive attack to the U.S., and I agree with that, and that's why I said he did what none of the other adversaries of the United States of America have ever done. You know, in that one day, he took away civil liberties that we've been fighting for since the Declaration of Independence. And that's why I say, in some degree, we lost. As long as we let him do... Let me give you some more facts here as to what I was talking about. In 2003, we lost 10 million visitors to the United States of America because of the immigration laws that were changed in 2001. By 2007, with the economy being down, we still had 2 million less visitors than we did in 2001. Now, we talk about our economy being down. You take 10 million visitors coming into this country spending money, that's a lot of money missing of our economy. And in 2007, with the world economy down, the value of the dollar being down, we should have been the mecca of tourism. Tourism was up in 2007 all over the place because everybody's dollars were starting to find less distance between themselves from whatever country they were from. So, you know, we lost all of that revenue and we lost all of those people coming into the country. Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina, said that in European business meetings that he had been attending for years, because South Carolina was one of the largest states to do a lot of business with European dignitaries and businessmen coming to the U.S. to invest, he said that the first half of every business meeting that he went to in 2007 was talking about how hard it was to get into the U.S. to do business. And these are Europeans that had been doing business in this country for decades.
That part and parcel is what we're going to be definitely discussing tonight, specifically, with the topics that, you know, put there out in the description. But we also have two other folks I want to bring in, and then we can let them chime in a little bit, and then we'll one, of course, does not need any introduction, and that is Samuel Samford. And also, I believe, Samuel Samford of the Constitutional Conservatives Unite, and I believe the next one is Rex from the Rex and Tech Show. So first I will have Sammy chime in, and then Rex, and then we'll bring it to you, Chris, and then we'll come back to Eugene, okay? Does that sound good, guys?
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to open up the mics for Sammy and Rex, and thank you very much, gentlemen, for calling in tonight. Go ahead.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Sammy.
Yeah, I mean, who is this speaking, Dean?
Gene,
sorry about that.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
He's used to it.
But what does the attack on 9/11, and here before I go on with that, if there's any family members that were affected by 9/11, my condolences and prayers go out to you. What your family sacrificed, and God bless you, and God bless your fallen family members. But I mean, they helped bring on this recession or depression, as I call it. But I mean, that's not the main thing. But with passage of NDAA and bills like that, they had stolen our freedom. And as Gene was saying about the passport restrictions, back in the day, an American did not need a visa to go to Europe. And vice versa, the Europeans, which were one of our biggest tourist people that come to Disney World or Disneyland or to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where Mark Sanford was governor at, or to Hilton Head Island, Now we got visas. They cannot come to our country, and we cannot go to their country without a visa. You can't even go to Canada now without a passport. Back in the day, you didn't have to have a passport to go to Canada. All you had to have was a driver's picture ID. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we might have had to tighten it up, but I will say this. So even though George Bush really let me down his last 4 years in office, at least he did not take very long to respond to bin Laden. But now we're been stuck in America's longest war, the war in Afghanistan. And we have lost 2,000 troops there, approximately. And we're not scheduled to get out of there until 2014. I mean, Afghanistan is our second Vietnam. We could have gone into Vietnam. If we had gone into Vietnam to really win the war, we had the military might. We had the military might to go into Afghanistan and eradicate this problem from the get-go. But they're playing little penny-ante politics with this crap. And they just turned over the jail at Bagram Air Force Base to the Afghanistanis, or whatever you call them. I mean, why are we letting a little puppet government, very corrupt, they poison our kids with heroin, and we prop up their warlords that grow this heroin? And this is the same country that protected and kept bin Laden. And this is a Republican issue and a Democratic issue. And there's not a dime's worth of difference on their policies towards it.
Well, and then if a third party wins the presidency this November, then it'll be an issue that perhaps, you know, they will be able to look at. And I'm not saying particularly solve, but it might have a different angle on the approach. But at this time, 703, if you'd like to chime in, and then I've got a few words I'd like to chime in about, and then Chris, go ahead. So 703.
Yeah, this is Rex.
Oh, that's what I thought. I just looked at it. Would it be presumption? I thought so, but you said you might not be able to come in till later, so I thought, uh-oh, maybe I'm wrong. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I got done with what I'm procrastinating what I'm supposed to be doing and decided to call in.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for coming.
But, yeah, I mean, look, 9/11 was a terrible tragedy for our nation. And, you know, my heart goes out to all the families and people who are touched by this horrific act. But, you know, from a military standpoint, we have to really view this as an utter failure. If you look at just the two towers of the World Trade Center alone, you had, you know, over 100,000 people that essentially live their day in those buildings, and less than 3,000, you know, were killed. So from a casualty standpoint, as a military strike, if you want to call it that, it was a failure. Where it succeeded, and where political terrorism always seeks to succeed, is in the fear factor. It creates a climate of fear, and a climate of fear that will paralyze you and will also convince you to allow, whether it is that particular enemy, someone who is using that enemy, or somebody who just wants to take advantage of a crisis, not letting it go to waste, to push things that under normal circumstances you would never accept. And therein lies the danger. Whether this, you know, to use something like 9/11, which required a response and probably required some defensive actions and some security actions, but to use it to institute essentially the superstructure of a police state is unconscionable, which is exactly what they did. So what you have here is an interesting parallel to our current presidential electoral politics, because what we are seeing played out with 9/11 is the policy of fear to get you to give up your civil liberties in order to be protected, and you will end up with less civil liberties and really no protection. The same thing with the electoral politics is the fear of Obama is designed to get you to accept a candidate that under normal circumstances conservatives and libertarians would never accept. And I think what we have to all really grasp a hold of, and 9/11 is a great and prominent example in our history, is that you don't give in to the fear. You stand up and you be more resolute in your principles, because if you abandon your principles in the face of something like this, then your enemy has won and you have lost. If you keep your principles, even if you suffer more casualties or more defeats, you still win, because you're standing up for those things that you believe in and those things that are right and true. And I think that that's what defines the American experience. Our history has been that, and we've sort of lost sight of that because we got fat and lazy and wealthy. And now I think there's a reckoning, and it's time for us to get back in touch with our roots. And I think the important lesson to take away from this is you respond to something like this not just by living your normal life, or as George Bush told us, to go out and go shopping to help the economy. You respond to this by saying we have a constitution, and that constitution has a Bill of Rights, and you cannot pass a piece of legislation, the Patriot Act or its progeny, the NDAA, simply because of an acute situation where we've had a little bit of fear. And that's exactly what they did. And that's what we need to stop, because you cannot repudiate any of the amendments to the Constitution except by an amendment. So Congress has basically passed an illegal, an illegitimate law, which is the Patriot Act and the NDAA as a result of 9/11, which is dangerous for the whole world, because if we have a police state here in the United States, then there is a police state across the whole world, because we are de facto the global empire right now. At least that's how I see it.
Hey, Robert,
now,
real
quick, Sam, I just want to make one comparison, and maybe people will be unhappy with this, maybe not, and they'll agree. I do hear the comparison between Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, still frequently and still up to this day, which I would have to respectfully disagree with the folks who say that, because. And every life loss is, of course, a tragedy. But if we're going to count the numbers of maimed and killed, I mean, Vietnam is just a slaughter. Now, of course, there are casualties. I'm not saying there's not. It's a reiterate that they're all a tragedy, each and every one of them. But when it comes to that point, now time-wise, we've been there, of course, longer than any. But to make it, to compare Iraq and Afghanistan and compare it to, you know, Vietnam, I don't think it's a fair comparison. And two, I mean, you have more, I mean, when the Iraq war was in full blown, you had more people, through my understanding, and someone please correct me if I'm wrong, more people in California being murdered every day, murdered by criminals in California than there were casualties in Iraq during the war. So to make these comparisons, you know, I just don't see them as a fair comparison. Sammy, and then I'll let Chris to be able to chime in and then go back to Gene. So go ahead.
Hey, Robert. No, I'm not comparing Iraq. We won the war in Iraq. George Bush signed the pullout day, and Barack Obama likes taking credit for it. The government that we helped install by free elections is still in office with no U.S. troops there. I'm talking about Afghanistan, and I'm not saying whether it's 55,000 that were killed in Vietnam or 2,000 killed in Afghanistan. But the whole point about it is we're really not there to win the war. That's my comparison. If we were there to really win the war, the might of the U.S. military could have won that war in a couple of years. If we were really, truly there to do it. And for the people that have fallen and for the tens of thousands that have been maimed for life, from Afghanistan, you have my admiration and deep respect. But no, my only comparison to Afghanistan and Vietnam was we're not there to win the war because we have the military might to win it if we really wanted to do it.
I see some validity in that statement where, you know, they are definitely having a lot of, you know, politics and that involved, but and we can get back to that, you know, later on in the evening. But I would like to give Chris the opportunity to go ahead and chime in.
Let me make one more point I was going to make.
Okay.
We had the chance, I think it was 1998 or 1999, to kill bin Laden in the upper hierarchy of Al-Qaeda, and Bill Clinton chose not to use the drone with a Hellfire missile on it and take him out because there were women and children there. And
about the women and children part, but I did hear that he didn't take the opportunity to get them, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if he had done that, 9/11 probably would have never even happened. And so it just blows me away. But as Rex said very eloquently about the whole process, and as you have, Robert, but here, I just want to interject that one point about we had a chance to take out bin Laden, and we would not be sitting here now if our government had taken its proper responsibility to take out a terrorist.
And I've heard that in some part. You know, I definitely can't even talk. I definitely agree because I'm trying to say two things at once. It's the problem, you know. But whether we would, we probably would not have had 9/11 if he would have taken him out. I'm not saying we would have had any other problems, but yeah, 9/11 probably would have fallen apart from that lack of leadership. But that being said, Chris, go ahead.
Well, I have a question. Has anybody seen any major memorial national-wide thing done today?
I saw Obama speak on the Arab Asset Recovery blog.
Really?
He
not mentioned 9/11.
But beyond that, you know.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
I watched about 3 hours. I mean, I normally don't watch Fox News at nighttime, but I'll watch it in the morning or the early afternoon, especially if I can't sleep. I will turn it on. I saw Fox News for at least 3 hours.
I'm sorry, Sam.
Did it put you to sleep?
No, No, it didn't. I had to turn on a scary movie.
That had to be tough. Sorry, guys.
Okay, so, all right, well, that was my first question. You know, just a thought, food for thought. A lot's changed since 9/11. 9/11 did something that most great wars do, or great tragedies. It pulls Americans together. But somewhere, if we look back through our history, and Rex is probably a little better historian than I am, but I try to study my history, but somewhere something got screwed up. You know, and we like to blame the enemy. We like to blame cultures. We like to blame religions. We like to blame everything. But really, what happened was, I really believe, regardless of who did 9/11, you know, who started, you know, who funded Al-Qaeda originally, I mean, we got our hands and fingers in everything. You know, there's, if you track everything down and you go far enough back, you know, these guys learned a lot of terrorist techniques from Nazi Germany, from, you know, the communists, from us. You know, so you can go all the way back, and you can blame a lot of people all the way up. But one thing that's different about this event is that we voluntarily allowed a president to take away our liberties. That was an amazing event. They turned us into sheep, and now we are piped around and controlled, from passports to cross into Canada to being frisked and body searched at the airports. You know, it's
to our children being searched.
Yeah.
I think that's ridiculous.
Here's the thing, and those are little things, but they're not little things, but they're small things in the bigger picture. But there are sites that track terrorist bombings and killings all over the country, all over the world, right? It ain't stopped. You know, it's going on. We've got wars upon wars upon revolutions, bombings in Europe. None of this has stopped. Our people, the leaders that we have voted into power, have not done their job, and it goes back for decades. It just doesn't go back to, like I say, it goes back way back. It just doesn't go back to 9/11. And I don't know if we were duped or if they really took advantage of it to really implement a lockdown on the American culture. Because here's the thing that, and I say this all the time to people, I don't care if a Republican was in power, if they vote something in like the Patriot Act, while they're in power, they ain't going to be there next year. You know, they're going to get ousted. That's just the typical, just look at history. You get a Repub, you get a Dim, you get a Repub, you get a Dim. So when we voluntarily go, rah, 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 George Bush is making us safe, and then the next guy comes in and says, wow, what a great tool. Thanks, George Bush. Now let me move my socialist control agenda down the pipeline a little faster. That's the problem. And the greatest thing that we've learned from 9/11 is we got scared, we got complacent, and we thought the government was going to take care of us, and now we're sitting here wondering when they're going to come and get us.
Well, Sammy, because I want Gene to be able to, you know, to get back in this. I just have to say one thing, and of course, you know, there's a lot that has been done, you know, since then that I do not agree with. But one thing I think we all can concede to is that there has not been another terrorist attack such as 9/11.
I can answer that in 2 seconds.
On America, you know, since then. But
hey,
I want you, hold on, guys, and hold on. I mean, we'll have time to get to those. But I just want to give Gene the opportunity to chime in. You there, Gene?
Am I back on? Hello?
Yeah, I never muted your mic. I never muted you.
I muted it on my end.
Oh, okay.
I missed your question. Say that again.
Have fun. Give her
help,
Gene.
I'm just giving you the floor to chime in on anything that you've heard. There was no specific question. No, I just made the comment that we have not been attacked, you know, in the manner of 9/11 since it's been 11 years. So.
But you're correct. But you know what?
Chris is salivating out there.
With all the money we spent on Homeland Security, all the money we spent on bordering and all that stuff,
we haven't foiled one attack either. There hasn't been evidence of we stopped an attack. You know, there's been several news breaks that we could have possibly foiled this and foiled that. But could have possibly means a lot, you know. But we haven't stopped anything. We spent a lot of money on what could have been. Chris, you are correct. They moved them in January over to Kuwait. And I got that from the New York Times. But
I know people again, over there.
I got you. Again, I just think that we sacrificed way too much for that that feeling of security that is still not secure. I mean, we all see things every day that we could go, oh, you know, that could happen, this could happen, and it doesn't, but thank God.
Well, as I said, because I've got an idea of where most of the people, you know, most of the people stand on these issues, and I'm not saying I'm in any disagreement or much disagreement, but I do like to have all, you know, look at, you know, both sides or many sides of an issue. And I'm going to say this, and then Rex, if you want to go ahead and chime in.
Well,
and then here's the thing, is what if, let's take this scenario, gentlemen. Let's take this scenario. With all the thing, you know, as I reiterate, there's never been, and Chris, we can talk about that in a little bit, you know, because I can hear you. I heard you over there, like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to answer this. However, what would the American people say? And then first I'll have Rex answer this, and then we'll go to Chris and Sammy, and then Eugene. Is what would the American people say about their government if we were indeed hit by another attack, or even worse, a biological, which we know there was a lot of, as you, I know there was talk about fear, there's a lot of fear and concern about biological attacks, and what if there was a nuclear attack, would the people not say the government has not done enough? Go ahead, Rex.
Well, I mean, if you're asking me what people will say, it's hard to predict, but I can tell you that based on the general mentality of Americans indoctrinated through the popular media and the government indoctrination centers that people think are public schools, I would argue that people would jump on the chance to have the government do more. And I think that is the intention. Look, it's a matter of understanding what security means, okay? Life is full of uncertainty and risk. You can manage it, but you cannot eliminate it. And governments are not instituted in order to protect you from all those risks. Governments are instituted to protect you under contract law from theft and in your personal property, and to protect your life, which does include national defense. Now, national defense is generally the responsibility of a civilian populace that enlists or is drafted into the military in times of conflict with outside forces. And as nice as it is to have the idea of ending war, it's never going to happen. As long as you have more than two people on this planet, at some point you will have war. The problem is that our wars are not waged as defensive or even as strategic military conflicts. Our wars are waged for the simple purpose of creating fear at home and extending imperial power across the globe. Now, when Newt Gingrich was running, he talked about projecting power. And that's a very powerful thing, because if you project power and you're seen as a fair broker who doesn't favor anyone in particular, just a certain set of principles, then your mere projection of power will quell the enemy's desire to go to war with you. And that's sort of the peace through strength idea. If you're in peace, if you prepare for war, then you will likely not have to fight that many wars. And we have the privilege of not having been invaded by a foreign power since World War II, and even then it was just the Japanese invading a few Aleutian Islands off the coast of Alaska. And that's because of our power. Now, one could argue that 9/11 was an invasion because the attack happened on our soil. But again, like I said, from a military standpoint, that was a complete failure, even though the tragic loss of life was pretty significant. You know, just to put it in perspective, okay, you had less than 3,000 innocent people killed by the actions of 19 Saudi terrorists on 9/11. But every day before and every day since, we voluntarily murder 4,000 innocent children in their wombs under the cover of law, which is a worse tragedy. And that's just something to put it in perspective. I'm not diminishing the loss of one life. I'm just saying that you got to keep these things in perspective. And when you create a structure and you use words in an Orwellian newspeak sense, such as Homeland Defense, there is no such thing as a Homeland Defense Department. Okay, that is the superstructure of a police state. That's what that is. There's no need for it. Now, where there's some problems between FBI, local law enforcement, and CIA intelligence and coordinating these things to fight a more nimble enemy in a post-Cold War environment, yes. And those things could have been corrected without creating a new superstructure that is essentially a police state and then passing legislation that basically empowers the government under cover of law to treat American citizens as criminals without due process and violation of the Constitution. And that's the problem, because if you allow this to happen, which essentially we have, then what are you fighting wars for, and who are you, and what kind of security do you have? You know, I mean, if you're secure in Nazi Germany, are you really happy about that? Is that the kind of country that you want to live in? So if you give up your principles in order to gain some false illusion of security provided by your global oligarchs in Washington, D.C. and New York City, then what are you secure from? You've built your own prison, and that's why you end up with the results we have now as far as policy goes, as far as unending wars, as far as political corruption, as far as an illegitimate president and an illegitimate, you know, competitor. So it's all part of us shifting our way of looking at things, and it goes back to our roots, and our roots are formed in liberty and in the traditions of Western civilization that extend back to the Greeks, the Jews, the Christians, and the Romans. That's our heritage. It's a 2,500-year heritage of Western civilization, and we're throwing it away in order to buy some illusory security. And people are throwing it away now by telling me Obama's so scary, we have to vote for Mitt Romney. That's not the answer.
Okay, I'm gonna bring up one quick point, real quick, Sammy, and then you're next. I just want to make a quick point, because I do want to discuss this tonight if anyone's interested. Is he brings up the Western civilization, and one topic I'd like to talk about tonight, later on the show, is the term the clash of civilizations. And what people know of that, and if we could discuss that as well, especially when it comes to Christendom and in Islam, and possibly in how the clash of civilizations, you know, the East and West might be, because I sometimes think we might be fighting a modern-day crusade. But anyway, let me get back to it. Go ahead, Sammy, and then Chris, and then Gene. So go ahead, Sammy.
I wanted to comment on what Chris was talking about. The one thing that George Bush did with creating all the laws after 9/11, he put a sunset clause in these laws, and they have been re-voted on by Barack Obama. Things have been added to it, and if you're not familiar with a sunset law, if they're not re-voted on, they go out. And George Bush had enough sense to put a sunset clause in these laws that were passed with Homeland Security and all these wiretaps and all this other crap, because he knew there would come a time they were needed immediately after 9/11. We had to do that after 9/11. But there was no right for these laws to be continued 11 years later, plain and simple. And, I mean, Robert, we were... Go ahead.
Robert, may I go next before the next person?
Go ahead.
Because I'd like, good. Okay, Sammy, I'd like to respectfully disagree. First of all, George Bush didn't put those sunset provisions in there. That was Congress. And second of all, I think
Congress.
That was just
designed. Congress.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think
that was designed to fool us into thinking, oh, well, that's okay. We give up a little bit of liberty, but it's only for a limited
period
of time. Okay, I think that it was more of a ploy. Second of all, I don't blame George Bush personally. I think George Bush is probably a good man, but he was picked because he was packed with rhinos and neocons around him who were basically pulling him around by the nose. And I can only imagine what kind of pressure that man was facing after 9/11, with having to do something as the commander in chief and all these voices chattering in his ear about do this, do that, do this. It's just a frightening situation, which only accentuates the fact that when you elect a man to the presidency or a woman, it is their judgment that you are putting on the line. Because in acute moments, the reason the presidency is one office is because in acute moments like this, you want someone to exercise swift and right judgment. And that's the principal concern here. You don't want someone like Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, because those guys don't exercise judgment. They're selfish pricks. But I will say this, Sammy. We did not need to do that, and here's why.
No.
The problem with taking these measures in order to create a sense of safety or security are foolish. Now, I will argue that we needed to ground all the airplanes. We needed to boost security around major monuments and popular terrorist targets. That's fine. I think that's a legitimate function of national defense. And let's remember something. All our airports are essentially exterior borders, so that is a federal issue. However, to codify in law this elimination of liberties is far more of a problem than what bin Laden or any terrorist could ever do to us. Because when we give these freedoms up, then the question is, well, what are you trying to preserve? Why defend America? What is America if you do that? And so I think that our fear, again, is what took over. And I'll admit at the time I thought, well, maybe they know what they're doing. You know, I'm a little scared. I live outside, you know, the ninth circle of hell known as the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C. So I thought, great, I'm in, you know, the zone of terrorist target area number two. But I chose not to give in to that fear, because if I want to be a free man, then I'm willing to live the risk of life as a free man and die as a free man rather than live as a slave. And that's essentially what they did with the Patriot Act.
Oh, I agree with you, Rex. I mean, I really didn't like it, but that's what the rhinos and the progressives and George Bush did in these buttholes, continue these laws and want to come after us. I mean, you have already shared on my show that when I came back from the protest in D.C. on the health care, we had somebody come by our house and said they were from the homeowners insurance and they needed to do a walkthrough. I found out later that there was nobody sent from the insurance company. And that's where I am right there with you and Chris and Gene. But I was just trying to put a little bit of justification out there, but because there was a sunset law in there, and you're right about it. Once you give somebody a law, it's a hell of a bitch to get rid of it.
Yeah, the income tax was supposed to be temporary.
Yeah. Our state sales tax and our city sales tax in Juneau, Alaska, to build a school, you know, was going to be 2 years. And let's see, I left 12 years ago, and it was 4 years before that they enacted it. It's still there, and it went up 1%. So it's all bullshit. Yep. Anyway, okay, you ready for this, Robert?
Sure.
Sure. All right, number one. We knew who these people were before this happened, and they did nothing about it. Okay, they already knew who these people were. They rounded up over 200 cells right after 9/11 and shipped them out and took them away. You know, it's all bull crap. Then, okay, so that's number one. So it goes back to what I was saying before. These games and these people and who started them and who funds them and who didn't fund them. First we fund them, then we train them, then they're our enemy later. We're all culpable for all of this stuff in that aspect. Now, after it happened, why isn't there another attack? Because they don't need to. They're winning. We're giving them we're giving them control of our country and our court. Why do they need to attack? They're winning the war without attacking us. They're taking over our country. They're in our federal government. They're in our educational systems. We got Sharia law in our court systems. Why attack? Game one. That's why we don't have another attack, because it's peaceful. And it's that whole concept which was learned. I mean, all these techniques have been learned from Russia, from Nazi Germany. You know, Russia, what was the great quote, Rex? That all we got to do is defeat America from within through its culture, the breakdown of its culture,
yep.
and our crooked politicians. What Newt says is so important to understand. We need to be energy independent, inefficient. Very good. Okay, why? Because the people we buy oil from and give our billions and billions of dollars to buy our damn politicians who sell our freedoms down the drain and allow these things, these infiltration of other cultures into our government bodies and our educational systems. It is all a big plan, and our crooked little frickin' politicians that we vote into power, that we hire to do a job, haven't been doing a job for a long time, and we're talking even pre-Bush. Now,
amen.
The question you have to ask yourself at this point in time is, are we awake enough to realize this, number one? I'm not sure we are, because they want us to vote for Romney, who will play along with all of it. You know, we already know who Obama is, so we're pretty clear. You know, you already have a plan. You know exactly what you need to do to stop him if you have a House and a Senate and some Republicans with some cojones. But if you get Romney in there, everybody's going to relax thinking he's a Republican. This man's a czar mentality. It's over. You know, and we're not – I've often said, Rex, and you can, you know, tell me I'm full of crap or whatever, but I've often said this every once in a while in a very sobering minute – that I believe it's going to take a major world war to turn this country around.
Well, and at this time,
we keep playing games.
Okay, Gene, I'd like to bring you in if there's anything you'd like to chime in about with everything that you've heard here.
Well, I'd like to go back to what your original question was when you turned it over to everyone was, you know, what would the American people say if we were attacked again? And my response to that would be, welcome to the 21st century. Ever since we've become part of the global economy and a part of the UN, and we've gone out and we've policed everywhere and we've pissed off all of our neighbors, essentially, if you go to any country and look at it across the globe, they deal with terrorism every day. I mean, you hear about bombings in just about every country at least once a year. Nobody gets left out. You know, we've been fortunate. We've been left out for a long time. But, I mean, we're the host of the UN. And that alone pisses off a lot of people, because the UN is nothing but an organization that uses the U.S. dollar and the U.S. military to police everybody that they don't like. And, you know, when we talk about wars a little bit, here's a little interesting tidbit. You mentioned about nuclear war or biochemicals or whatever. You know, Bush Sr. was smart enough to leave Saddam Hussein in power. Iraq and Iran, we had been funding wars on both sides of that for years to keep them both destabilized.
Yep.
Now that Saddam Hussein is out of power over there, Iran has gone to building nuclear, you know, nuclear power. I don't think they're to quite weapons grade yet, but I'm not there. I don't know. But
next week,
you can bet your butt this. If Iran had started that program when Saddam Hussein was in power, he'd have mustard gassed them. He don't play. And, you know what? We'd have given him the mustard gas to do it.
Well,
you know,
two things, Gene. Two things. One, and maybe we can speak of this later, and, you know, is two things. One, you know, the welcome to the 20th century you know, the 21st century, maybe that needs a little more elaboration. And to say that, oh, well, all these other countries, you know, you look at them on TV and they're getting bombed all the time. Okay, well, yes, that is true, but that's one of the great things about the United States is people having a sense of security, in which, you know what, I'm so glad I don't...
Maybe that's
how
problem.
Many times have you seen that... Wait a minute, Chris.
Sorry.
Is that... Here's one of the things that I do see it. Especially when I hear remarks such as, oh, well, welcome to the 21st century. Oh, well, this kind of stuff happens over in Israel, and this stuff happens in all these other countries, you know, all the time.
okay, that's why you hear the comment, the United States, one of the reasons, I'm not saying it's the sole one, okay, I have to put that disclaimer out there so no one misquotes me, is that one of the reasons why, in my opinion at least, that we are one of the greatest countries in the world is because we can watch that on the television set, like, oh my gosh, I'm glad I don't want to freaking worry about that kind of stuff happening here. And to say that, oh, well, welcome to the 21st century, this is happening over in Israel, so hey, you know what? It's just, it's only natural that it's going to happen here. I mean, you know what's happening everywhere else. I mean, to be honest, and I could be wrong, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like a kind of a blasé attitude, you know, to have it that way. Oh, well, you know, this happens everywhere else. We should expect it to happen here. I mean, we house the UN. People, that pisses people off. Well, I mean, we should expect that kind of stuff to happen here. I mean, well, one of the things the United States stands on is, hey, that kind of stuff doesn't happen here. Now, I know some of the things that that people are talking about with NDAA, you know, and the freedoms are like, well, that doesn't happen here in the United States. We're not like the other countries. We're different. And I think this stands to be different, too. As we stand to be different to say that we can tell our folks, we can tell our citizens, like, hey, you know, people are getting bombed the hell out of them over in Israel. But you know what? We're not, that stuff's not going to happen here in the United States. Okay?
What?
You know, and that's one. Two, of course, you know, I got so concentrated on that, you know, can't recall on the second thing I was going to say, but go ahead. Sammy, were you going to say comment on that? Or?
Yeah, let me comment, then I got to get offline. Another thing is the Second Amendment rights. There are over 250 million firearms in our country. These people know we are well armed, and the Japanese knew that. That's the reason they would not come to the mainland of the United States, to California or to Jacksonville, Florida, or anywhere in Florida, anywhere on the East Coast or West Coast, because they knew we were well armed. And thank God our founding fathers put that into the clause. But, hey, y'all keep on rocking, gentlemen. I'm going to be listening from my computer. I need to shut down and get ready for my show at 11 o'clock.
Sure. Thank you very much, Sammy, you know, for coming in. And, you know, I appreciate it. And, you know, I'll be looking to call in your show sometime this evening as well. But since I interrupted Gene, you know, and I normally don't like to do that, but, you know, when I feel the muse hit me, then, you know, there's times I just feel like, you know, I need to interject and speak out. So go ahead, Gene, you know, and continue on. But I just want to interject with that.
Sure, and I'll elaborate on that. What I mean by saying welcome to the 21st century is, first of all, we live in an ever-changing world, not just our country. And in this ever-changing world, we make a lot of changes by being the biggest bully on the block. And sooner or later, when you're the biggest bully on the block, someone is going to stand up and fight back. I don't take it as blasé. You know, I certainly still say that America is the best place on the planet to live. And it will continue to be as long as we stand up for our rights and not give them away. But again, you just cannot be immune to the things that are happening in the rest of the world. I think it's a naive attitude to say, well, that's happening everywhere else and it just cannot happen here, because I'm sorry to tell you, but it can, and it will happen if you continue to do the things to create that animosity towards you.
Well, and actually, thank you, Gene, because you reminded me on my second point that I want to talk about, and I'd like to talk about this later on and then continue. Two things, of course, I wanted to discuss later if we got time and people are up for it, is I definitely want the idea of the clash of the civilizations, and also what about the United States as the hegemonic power of the world and what needs to be done to maintain that status, because let's be frank, if the United States is not the, you know, some people would call it empire, but if the United States ceases to be, you know, the hegemonic power of the world, then that, it's going to create a vacuum, and that vacuum will be filled. And we all know who's going to fill that vacuum if it's not the United States. That vacuum will be filled by China. Now, what kind of world – let's look at what this world's going to look like if it's no longer the United States is that power, but China. And what do we need to do to make sure that that does not happen? Because if this world – if the hegemonic status, you know, or world power belongs to China, not the United States, I think, you know, what do you think the world's going to look like then? And I'm not just talking about the United States. I'm talking about the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, Robert, in regards to that, I would argue that, you know, the difference between us as an empire and empires of the past is that we tend not to politically take over the places where we go to war. Unfortunately, we meddle in their affairs a little bit more than we should, but I think it goes back to that projection of power. If you project the power where you let them know, listen, these are the principles of freedom and liberty, and we expect you to adhere to them at least on an international level, and when you don't, you got to mess with us, and we are economically strong and we're militarily strong, so don't mess with us, then I think that that will actually prevent many of the problems. Unfortunately, what we do is we meddle and we weaken ourselves. And I suspect that this is not of our own doing. This is the oligarchs that we've allowed to take over as a parasitic influence on the American host. But as far as provoking other people, the simple fact is from an international standpoint, the world envies the United States. They envy all of the benefits, the liberties, the technology that we have, but they also despise us for the very same reason that they don't have it at home. And it goes back to a kind of a zero-sum mentality. If the United States have it, then they must have taken it from somebody. Well, we didn't take it from anybody. We built it ourselves, despite what Barack Obama seems to think.
Oh, you stole my thunder, Rex. Yeah.
And the fact is that wealth is something that can be created. And they can create it, too, if they would adopt the good things that we've done. But see, what everybody tends to do, and this actually occurs with the liberal enemies that we have within our borders as well as all the foreigners overseas, is that you point out all of the crimes and mistakes and the blights of America, and you ignore all the good things that we've done. You know, everybody likes to point out, well, you know, you had African slavery and you did this and there was this disaster and that and this provocation. Yes, we've done a lot of bad things. Everybody has. We're human beings and we're prone to make mistakes, and sometimes our leaders are just jerks. But the fact is that we've done more good than anybody else also, and that tends to be overlooked because that's taken for granted as if it's something that's always been here. But it hasn't always been here. It's only been here because of our founding documents and the principles that they are espoused that are 2,500 years of history. And, you know, you mentioned clash of civilizations. Well, I think the clash of civilizations is actually occurring within our country more prominently than it is occurring overseas, okay? The fact is that you don't consider Islam a threat from the East. Islam is a Western monotheistic religion. Now, I believe it's an erroneous religion. I think it actually may even be considered the first major Christian heresy, but at least the Muslims do pray to, you know, the one God that Jews and Christians do. The East is China, and that's a different kind of a threat. Now, I'm not saying that Islam is not a problem. It always has been for Western civilization, and in fact, it's whenever Western civilization has lost its way, lost its path, that Islam becomes kind of a chastisement for our weakness and our mistakes. The clash of civilizations that's occurring is, who are we? Are we the inheritors of 2,500 years of Christendom and Western civilization, or are we going to go down the Marxist dialectic path of historical determinism, which will result in the dictatorship of relativism? That's the clash that's going on, and it's happening right here at home. The Muslims are not a threat to us unless we invite them in to become a threat to us. And what you have is you have a kind of a multi-front attack, because even though they are technically enemies, Marxists, liberals, socialists, whatever you want to call them, and Muslims are seeking to take out that which makes us strong, and that is that core principles of Western civilization. Now, what will happen after that? they'll tear each other apart. But they first have to take us out because we're the ones that stand in the way. You know, for example, you have liberals who, you know, well, you know, it's just a homosexual lifestyle. Everybody has a free choice, and the Muslims will be kind of quiet about it, okay? But let's be clear about something. There are no open homosexuals in Muslim countries because they kill them.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're a liberal homosexual who wants to be tolerant of Muslims, well, you know, once they become a majority in this country, you'd better watch out. Because if you're an open homosexual and this country does have Sharia law, you're going to be killed, okay? It's just a fact. It's just a historical fact.
They throw you off a cliff.
Exactly. So, they're forming these alliances because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And we're the enemy because we're the ones that stand for core principles of self-determination and true local community living, which is anathema to any kind of top-down bureaucratic system, which is what Marxism is, it's what socialism is, it's what corporatism is, and it is also what Islam is. Islam has only ever succeeded when it is either engaging in imperial plunder, which is why it expanded so quickly by the power of the sword, and then whenever it doesn't have plunder and it's left to its own devices, it becomes bureaucratic, top-heavy, and stagnates, which is why the West took off in the last 500 years, and the Ottoman Empire stagnated because of their bureaucratic socialism, which is effectively what it is. And now, in order to reclaim their greatness, there are those elements in the Muslim world that are seeking to wage war again, because that is when they have their moments of glory and expansion. And just to be clear, we are not against Muslims, okay, because just like most everybody else these days, most Muslims are not really Muslim. They're just culturally identified as Muslims, but they don't practice their faith. There is a growing element that is very fervent in their imperial jihadism. But for the most part, they're not really the threat. The threat is right here at home. And the fact is that if someone truly wants to practice their Muslim faith, there are plenty of countries where they can do that, including this one. But you can only practice it here within the context of a Judeo-Christian country that affords you the right to worship as you please, guaranteed by our First Amendment. It does not afford you the right to change our culture to suit yours. If you want to do that, there are plenty of countries in which you can live that are under Muslim law. The reason that they seem so benign and nice now is because they're a minority. And generally speaking, until Islam increases to at least 10% of your population, it will never be a problem. But once it gets above 10%, you'd better watch out. Europe is about to experience that. Some countries already are, and they're seeing massive conflicts, and that will happen here if we allow it. Now, just because we don't want to change our culture to a Muslim culture here doesn't mean that we have to go over there and, you know, invade the lands that they're now in at the current time, unless they become a threat, such as Iran getting a nuclear weapon. And, you know, to be clear, it's not a unified threat because the Muslims are divided. The Iranians and the Iraqis don't get along. The Saudis and the Iranians don't get along. They sometimes make
Shiite,
an alliance.
Shiites, Sunnis.
Yeah. So really, as far as a bloc, we're not about to see an invasion of the Muslim world against the West. That's just not going to happen. But you can degrade your culture, and there are those elements in our culture that will use Islam as a wedge to dislodge us. And that's what you have to decide. Who are we as a people? The clash is happening right here at home.
Yep.
And you got to get your house in order first if you're going to be a fair broker in the world. Because if we are economically destitute and morally bankrupt, that vacuum you talked about with the lack of our hegemony, well, that's inevitable. Because we won't have the ability to keep it.
That's right. Amen. Amen, Rex. God, I couldn't have said it better myself.
No, you probably could have.
No, you have a few more details than I do.
Well, go ahead, Chris. We haven't heard from you for a little bit. Go ahead, and then we'll move back to Gene and go from there.
Well, the I have this simple, a very simple thing. We're in a war. We've given up our freedoms. The left has a technique. It's like you talk about, Rex talks about the alliances. Well, you know exactly what they're doing. And what he said about the liberals, I've said that comment many times to people that, they're the supreme left in all their oddities and cultural oddities would be the first people they would kill if they took over, because that's not acceptable in their culture. So they are very quiet and very submissive, kind of, to our laws and our rules and our culture for a while. And all we got to do is look to Europe, where the population is reaching that 10% and above, and we will see our future, you know, if we keep down the same path. And the thing is that people are confused. They're confused because we don't educate our children anymore. You know, it's amazing to me how many people don't even understand this basic issue of what we're discussing in these talks with Kelly on state sovereignty, you know, and of course, you know, to be corrected, there's national, you know, the federal sovereignty and the state sovereignty and all those details. But, you know, it's a long explanation every time you say it, so I just say state sovereignty. We gave up our rights to the federal government. Once federal government got in power, and many of us, and like my mother, who's history sociology major, has been saying this as long as I can remember, you know, that this is the direction we're going. And because she studies those trends, you know, cultural, historic, you know, everything, wars, religion, everything. I've been indoctrinated with this stuff my whole life. And then I've watched all this stuff come true, and I've watched people voted into power. So the mistake we made, I think all of us did, and why we're so mad, I know why I'm so mad, is I thought because I was voting for Republicans that I was getting the knight in white and shining armor to protect God, country, my rights. And when you come to find out, we haven't been, because they're just as power hungry, federalist thinking, top down, government control, you know, concept is the left. They just have a little different twist on where they want to take the whole world. You know, but Rex said this so well, you know, there's socialistic government and there's corporate socialism. You know, we're down to what worldwide, Rex? 5 corporations that own everything?
Pretty much.
Yeah, about 5 corporations, which is a small number compared to what it was years ago. And people don't understand this. So when you vote for that R, you're voting for another form of socialism. You may have a little bit more freedoms and a little bit more chance for prosperity, a little bit more chance to start and own your own business, but you're going to have the same lockdown. You still give up your freedoms. And I've said that, I don't know, in 100,000 posts this whole election season in the battle over, oh, my God, we might have to vote for Romney. And I'm like, oh, my God, you don't want to do that because there's very little difference between them. But I think people don't understand. They don't understand that because they look at Obama as a Marxist socialist and Romney is just a greedy businessman. No, he's more than that. He's part of him and the wealth and the people that he's tied to is part of that whole culture of taking over the world. Now, the people who pull the strings on either side, the people who donated to Obama, the people who own the Fed, the people who we bail out, and the people who own Romney are all the same people. So I really believe that they you know, jump behind Romney, not because Romney's a better guy, but I think that Obama just kind of went Marxist on him a little too hard, and they had to find another candidate. They don't care. They're going to get the same result no matter who's in power. Sooner or later, at the pace we're going, they will come for our guns. When they come for they've already got control of everybody. Half the people in this country are on some kind of social welfare program to some degree or another. They are dependent on government. People are clueless about our history, our culture, the original intent of the, you know, when they founding fathers. You know, it doesn't take you long to learn this stuff. Read a couple books and listen to a couple blog talk radio, and you kind of start to realize, you know, what this country was founded on. And people don't understand our history. They don't understand anything. And so they're just walking around blind. They're programmed by the television. Rex says it's the best. Unplug. You'd be amazed how much more knowledge you can gain unplugging and being plugged into a few good sources on the Internet and groups and everything from blog talk radio or whatever. But we have an ignorant culture that really does expect the government to take care of them. And it's just mind-boggling to me to see how fast that's occurred. You know, and you think of it, and back to the point of 9/11. 9/11 was the last unique rallying point in America that smelled American. You know what I mean? It had that American feel to it. I haven't seen that since then. We've sold it down the drain. And over to Gene, what he said, and a lot of people don't understand this, but they hit Iraq. I mean, they took Iraq out in a blink. Heck, Bush Sr. took it out in a blink. You know, ground troops hardly even got to fire a shot. So they took it out, went in there, cleaned it up, collected all the arms in Iraq. They had a depot, a weapons depot, 10 miles long, where they just started collecting crap, throwing it in there, and buying it, bribing it off the street, you know, taking it from people, you know, weapons depots, whatever. Well, you know what they never did in that war? They never secured the Syrian border. Now, what army would be stupid enough not to secure the Syrian border unless there was a different agenda in that game?
And Chris, not Chris, you're Chris. I mean, Gene, would you like to chime in on any of that?
I want to go a little bit different direction. So I'll let Chris finish, and then if you come back to me then.
No, I'm good. I just think that where we're at is we're at a point where we have so many dynamics going on that you could pick any point, whether it's the breakdown of our culture, the breakdown of our constitution, the breakdown, you know, from a Judeo-Christian society, breakdown of our economics, building a codependent culture, to building stupid people, you know, in our educational system, to empowering socialists and communists, you know, in the unions and the people that Obama represents, to bailing out and empowering the world order corporations. You know, we're basically, I mean, the list goes on. I think anybody who really studies any of this stuff could sit down and write a list of about several hundred things we're facing at the same time, from terrorism to war in the middle, you know, a firestorm coming out of the Middle East based on the Muslim Brotherhood and what they're going to do. An article while I was listening to you guys talk, in Egypt, they got all fired up and jumped into our embassy and ripped our American flag down and got all crazy.
Right,
you know,
I heard about that.
And how much did wasn't that McCain that said we got to send them that $1 billion because they're our allies? Our politicians are selling us down the drain in their greed. We've got to get lobbyists out of Washington. We've got to enact some kind of term limit. We have to break the greed. And it really boils down to what our discussions have been over the last couple of weeks is if we don't either replace the RNC or get it back, we're screwed because we no longer have that knight in shiny armor to protect God, country, and the Constitution. Gene, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to first say the RNC was never our knight in shining armor. It was an illusion. All of the things that you just listed out led to the biggest atrocity of all, and that's the NDAA.
Yep.
When the NDAA was passed, it took away all of the rights that we know. I mean, the entire Bill of Rights is really gone. The government has not exercised that yet, and they may or may not, but the Patriot Act was the start of it. And then when they finalized it, or when they added to it or reworded it in the NDAA, when they declared America the battleground and give the U.S. military forces an opportunity to operate on U.S. soil and declare war against the American people, you have no more rights. You have no civil rights. Martial law is actually declared in this country. They are not exercising it, but it is a matter. It's not a matter of Congress now. It's not a matter of representatives. It's not a matter of the governor. It's a matter of the president at his only whim to say martial law. Exercise it. Because it's done. It's already written in law. We give them that authority with the NDAA. So that means you're not in right to a trial, you're not in right to a jury, you're not in right to a lawyer, a phone call, nothing. I mean, you're a political prisoner at any time they wish to make that happen. And we cannot take back any of these other rights or correct any of these other injustices that we see or have named on this list until we get rid of this NDAA. Because at any time we start making headway toward any of that other laundry list that you laid out there, and we put whoever the sitting president is at an uneasy situation.
He's going to exercise that right.
And with what we've seen with the Romney camp, I mean, you know, Bush was an arrogant, narrow-minded, I got another list of words for him, but and then we give it to somebody like Obama, and he even stretches it more. If we give it to somebody like Romney, that this guy will turn on his own people in his own political party or his own political clubhouse, what's he going to do to the American people with the authority that he's been given from Bush and from Obama? The thing that scares me the most since 9/11 is the NDAA. And I'll let you guys take it from there.
Rex?
Well, go ahead, Rex. We'll take, I guess, Rex is next. You there, Rex?
No, I'm here. I was muted.
Okay.
I was walking through a room with a movie playing, so I didn't want it to be up.
I just came back in.
No problem.
So I will head back out to a private location. But, yeah, I mean, everything you guys said is right. Now, the one thing I will say is that the NDAA does not scare me. And here's why, okay? If you are afraid, you will make bad decisions and you will be enslaved. The very simple fact is that it's a matter of shifting paradigms, okay? In order to have a third party succeed, which is not impossible. In fact, it can be very easily done. You just need to get people to let go of that fear of what they see in front of them as normal and try to hold on to it so tightly that they're, even if it sucks, they're willing to hold on to it because it's familiar. You got to get out of the comfort zone.
Right.
And the real problem is that we don't understand law. We are engrossed in a world of positive man-made law. Positive law has absolutely no bearing except by consensus. If you don't give it your assent, the consent of the governed, positive law does not exist. The only thing that actually exists that no matter if everybody decides to vote against it won't change is the natural law. And the natural law has two dimensions. There's the material and then the invisible. The law of gravity. You can put it on a ballot, and you can say, we want to change the law of gravity and make it a different number, and everybody can vote for it, and guess what? The next day, gravity will still be the same thing. So some things are immutable, and the moral law is also immutable. Now, whether you are a deist, an atheist, a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, it doesn't matter. If you're a human being, you know damn well that there is such a thing as a moral law, because historically, in every civilization, there are certain things that are just binding for just about every culture, okay?
Yep.
And in the cultures where they're not binding, it's because positive law has sought to change them. You can't change things that are the way that they are. That's reality. And if you're not being a realist, then you're living in a fantasy world. And I've used the analogy before. It's like in the Matrix. You can either take the blue pill and hold on to your comfort zone and all the trappings of everything that appears normal and slowly slip into a life of no consequence and slavery, or you take the red pill and you get out, and sometimes it's uncomfortable. And in fact, it should be uncomfortable. It should be challenging, because if life isn't a challenge, then what's the point of living it? Our positive law only has validity when it is based on the natural law. If it doesn't comport with the natural law, it is invalid. Our Constitution is a document that truly comports with the natural law. Now, the argument you always get when you say something like that is, well, but it counted blacks as two-thirds. Well, it didn't say that they were two-thirds of a human being, because some of the people who drafted that document thought they were less than human, and others thought that they were equally human. It was two-thirds simply for electoral politics. But those men, most of whom owned African slaves, wrote a document that transcended their own prejudice. And Thomas Jefferson penned the words beautifully. We hold these truths to be self-evident. That means natural law. They exist just because they are. That all men are created equal. Now, he owned African slaves. How can he write all men are created equal? Well, it transcends his own prejudice, and it took someone like Martin Luther King Jr. to fulfill that promise that Jefferson wrote. So we are self-correcting, and we have a self-correcting document. If there's something wrong in the Constitution, as some people say, well, it's outdated, it needs to be changed. Well, they wrote in a change policy. It's Article 5. We know how to change it.
Right.
But you have to comport with the natural law. And so NDAA does not comport with the natural law because it violates the most basic principle, and that is your right as an individual to self-determination. If the NDAA is a law, then the Constitution does not exist, and therefore it cannot live in the same place. You cannot have a U.S. Constitution and NDAA occupying the same place because those are two diametrically opposed philosophies of how governance should be, and they cannot coexist. So we have a choice now. You either accept the world of the NDAA and you say goodbye to the U.S. Constitution,
yep,
or you embrace the U.S. Constitution and you say the NDAA is an invalid law. What do you do about an invalid law? You know, one of those things is that you can get on Blog Talk Radio and bitch about everything in the world, but if you don't offer a solution, then what are you really doing? You're part of the problem. The solution is you nullify it, because we have to remember something. We have 50 sovereign governments in our republic. 50, okay? There's only one federal government, but there are 50 sovereign state governments. If you simply have the states nullify NDAA, as the Commonwealth of Virginia has done, then if two-thirds of the states nullify it, it is no longer a law, no matter what Congress, the president, whether it's corporatist Romney or Marxist Obama, or the Supreme Court does, won't change it because the states have spoken. And, you know, for people who say, oh, that sounds kind of impossible. Well, think back to something called Prohibition. That was an amendment to the Constitution that was proposed by Congress, ratified by the states, and it banned alcohol in all of the country. It was repealed by the states. Congress never passed a law to repeal Prohibition. The states all passed laws. Now, not all of them did, but, you know, at least two-thirds of the states passed laws to nullify Prohibition as a constitutional amendment, and therefore it was reversed. That can be done with any law. So what we have to do is realize that we are empowered. We have the power no matter what they do, and the only way you lose that power is by giving it up through fear. And the reason you know this is true, why did Mitt Romney have to pretend that there was a convention and that he was nominated? Because that's the illusion that people have to buy in order to be convinced that they're so afraid of Obama that they have to vote for Romney. Otherwise, Romney could have just said, hey, you know what, I know that Gingrich and Paul can be on the ballot, but screw that, I'm just going to go ahead and make myself the nominee. And the guys in the party would have been like, yeah, cool, let's do that. Well, that's effectively what they did, but they had to make it pretend to be legitimate because they know that if enough people are upset about it, then they lose all their power. So it's the illusion that we buy into through fear that feeds the environment that we're in, and we need to free ourselves of this. The fact is Mitt Romney is nothing more than controlled opposition. He's just not another ambitious guy who wants Obama's job. He is set up in order to give you what you feel is a choice that is actually no choice. And in that sense, he's worse than the other guy because he's more dangerous because he feeds the illusion to a greater degree. And that's why he must be defeated. And if that means Obama's president, so be it. Don't blame me. Don't blame Robert. Don't blame Sammy. Don't blame Chris. You go ahead and blame Rince Pubis.
Blame Gene.
John Sununu. And don't blame Gene. Blame Mitt Romney. They're the guys that
exactly.
did this. So,
blame the RNC establishment.
Right.
I would add others onto that list real quick. And then, you know, whoever wants to chime in, Gene, Chris, whatever. But, I mean, I would also add onto that list, sadly enough, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, because they played right along with it.
Yep.
Because they're owned by the corporations.
Yep. And they were the ones who were supposed to give us the conservative side, which, you know, they did not. We all know that.
They're the benefactors
yeah.
of corporate welfare.
Yep. Laura Engstrom said today that if the GOP can't beat Romney with his record, they need to be torn down. She said this is ridiculous. And then Rush Limbaugh had something on there. I haven't listened to the recording of it yet, but the basic, you know, premise of it is that the GOP is going to crash if Romney loses. So I think people know this. I've been getting a lot of, you know, miscellaneous questions on my group about, you know, what's the outcome here? What's the chance of a third party? And what's this? What's that? What's the other? you know, and we all, you know, everything's up in the air. We don't know. We don't know how many rigged voting machines they have. We don't know what the final game is. We don't know if people will coalesce behind, you know, we already know nobody's going to coalesce behind one candidate, you know, but if they coalesce behind one or two enough to force this thing into a split vote, you know, where there's not a guaranteed winner and it has to go to the House, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. But one thing I do know, if it doesn't change, we're screwed. It's got to change. And there is so much attack against all the third parties from, you know, Good in Pennsylvania. They got him off the ballot down there. They're hitting Gary Johnson in all the states that Romney needs to beat Obama in because Johnson's bleeding off votes. And but the Libertarian Party is a little more powerful with more money, you know, and more ground troops and more ground games, so they've been able to knock the RNC back and stay on the ballot. It's a war right now. We all, you know, this is just a continuation of the war that we just experienced through the whole primary and through, you know, right through the convention. This is getting ugly. And you know why it's getting ugly? They're scared. You know, and Rex said this before. You've got to change the way you look at things. If we weren't getting attacked, if we were not a threat, if truth and information wasn't a threat, they wouldn't waste their frickin' time with us. I didn't say the other word, frickin'.
Thank you.
I know. But, you know, this is important to understand, is that you have to educate yourself. You have to know what your rights are. You have to understand what Rex talks about. You are a sovereign citizen. You know, it's you know, we got 300 million people controlled by what, 0.0001% of the nation? I mean, that's pretty embarrassing that Americans, free-thinking Americans, I'm, you know, I'm all pioneer background. You know, I grew up on the West Coast. And to think of what those pioneers went through, you know, to settle the West. And, you know, of course, I lived in Alaska, too. And what people, my wife's family went to Alaska, they did not even have long-distance telephones in the Second World War in Alaska. They had Morse code because they didn't have long-distance telephones set up. That's not that long ago. Yeah, you know, and so they had the Japanese invade the Aleutian Islands and people sitting around, you know, listening to radios and Morse code to get information. You know, that's not that long ago, folks. And we fought the greatest battles in the world. We fought World War One, World War Two, and the Korean War. And then really Korean War could be arguably the Second World War was the last real war we fought. After that, it was all games. You know, we puttered around and
actually,
deals with
actually,
our enemies.
Chris, the last real war we fought was in Bulgaria, because Bulgaria was the last country we actually formally declared war against, and that was done in 1942. Since then, we have not declared formally one single war.
Technically. But I'm saying in terms of all of our conflicts around the world. You know, we're just playing games. We're protecting interests. We're using our army to protect, you know, corporate investments. We're using our army to threaten dictators so they'll give us resources. I mean, no wonder the freaking world hates us sometimes. You know, I'm not making excuses for anything. 9/11, nothing. No excuses. But something's got to change. And I do not believe it'll change with either party that's in power. Because they're totally bought and paid. They're bought and paid for, period. End of report.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
G?
Yeah. Yeah, Rex, I'd like to go back to something you said. You said that, you know, the Constitution and the NDAA cannot live in the same world. What world do you feel that you live in today? With knowing what you know and seeing what you see, do you feel that you live in the NDAA world, or do you feel that you live in the Constitution world?
Oh, well, that's very simple. I choose to live in the world of the U.S. Constitution, and whether the NDAA is a fact or not, I'm still a free man. Now, they can put me in prison, they can kill me, but I'm free. You know, I'm free because Jesus Christ came 2,000 years ago to make me free. I will live free, I will die free, no matter what they do. The fact is that slavery is the natural state of human affairs, because man will always try to rule over man, because every one of us thinks that we know better than the other guy. The unique proposition of the United States is that, hey, you know what? You don't know better than the other guy. You live your life, and you let him live his. And that's the world that I live in, because I choose to live in it. Now, the reason that I'm doing, the Blog Talk Radio and Facebook and all that stuff is because I want other people to know about that freedom. And when enough of us do know that we are free, then we can't be enslaved. And so the fact is that those two things cannot exist in the same space at the same time. It is all a matter of your perspective. Now, what will happen? I don't know. The future is uncertain. Everybody can predict everything, but, you know, everybody has their opinion, but opinions are like armpits. You know, everybody's got a couple, and they usually stink. So that's it's really.
I'll give you another analogy, but we won't tell you. We won't say that here now.
Well, if this was a Tex and Rex show, I would have used the other analogy. But since this is Bard's Logic Political Talk, I use the clean analogy.
Well, I appreciate that.
But the simple fact is that the concept of sovereignty is not a positive law. It is a natural fact, and you only can abdicate it. Illusory, and that is your personal choice. It isn't done by law. It isn't done by oligarchs. It isn't done by corporatists. The only thing they can do to you is jail you and kill you. Well, guess what?
That's correct.
At some point, you're going to be killed or die anyway. The question is, how will you live until that moment? Will you be free because you choose to be free, or will you acquiesce to being a slave? They manage your mind because they can't enslave you. Look, no populace has ever been perpetually enslaved by an authority. Even the Jews in Egypt, it lasted for 400 years, but they were set free. It cannot be perpetuated that long because people will eventually become resistant to it. But if you have them choose to be slaves, then they will be slaves forever. And that's why
right.
We have to wake up and choose freedom and then act accordingly. And the oligarchs lose their power because guess what? Like Chris just said, what are they, 0.00001%? They're scared of us.
Mm-hmm.
We outnumber them by such large numbers, it is unbelievable. And that always wins because even if we take on 90% casualties, we'll still outnumber them, 10 to 1 or 100 to 1. So it's never a problem unless you give up your freedom by saying, well, you know, I guess there's nothing I can do about it, so the NDA must be okay. No, you never say it's okay. Never, ever, ever say it's okay. And that's the way that I see it. That's the way that I choose to live. I know where I stand, what my life is, and I know that there will be consequences for choosing to be free in an unfree world, but that is where we live, and it is not unpatriotic to acknowledge the fact that this country has lost its way. It's actually the Patriotic Act to stand up and recognize, hey, someone's screwing up my country, because my country is not Washington, D.C. My country is these United States of America. Washington, D.C. and Wall Street are just two foreign entities that are seeking
powers.
To take over it. Yep.
Yep. Foreign powers.
I gotcha. I was just curious as to how you would respond to that. It's a good answer, good response.
Well, it's not mine.
Oh.
I won't take any credit
for
it. I learned that one from, Thomas Jefferson and St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine, and it goes back through the entire gamut of Western civilization. I stand on their shoulders. I've not come up with any of this stuff. It's just a matter of, do you want to know where you come from and who you are to know where you're going? And it's up to each one of us to do that. And, of course, if you know it, then it's incumbent upon you to tell others. Now, whether they receive that information or not, that's up to them.
Right. We always go through fluxes, and this is your history sociology, lesson, and I'm not going to go through, timelines and shit, okay? But we always go through fluxes. People go through struggles. They unite. They stand tall. We go through prosperity, we get lazy, bad people take over, they take over too much, we fight back. That whole flux has been going on since the beginning of time and in the development of Western civilization. Here's the problem. We've never had it so bad. You know what I mean? We always had some of those, especially in America, we've always had those basic foundational documents held up and respected. And now we have this, Gene asked about what world do we live in, the Constitution or the NDAA. I mean, I understand what he's at. I mean, maybe I hope I understand what he's asking, but I think we're in the NDAA side of it right now. Yeah, even though what Rex says is true, it's our choice and our belief, and we're holding on and we're fighting. But that's what they want, because that document and Obamacare, yeah, it's pretty much totalitarianism right down the line. And they can just come and pick you up and put you away and kill you and whatever, tell you when, where to work, you know, how much money you're going to pay in taxes, you know, what they'll test you and find out what skill set you are, and if, and, you know, and if you're good at pulling chains on a green chain on a sawmill, that's where you'll work. You know, it's basic totalitarianism. You know,
One of the things I want to do, guys, tonight is, there's this audio. It's about 6 minutes, but it talks about America, and it kind of talks about where we've been and what we've done, you know, as a nation, especially when it comes to helping out other nations. And so I'm going to play this, and then I'd like to get some people's responses.
All right.
And I think, Robert, today being 9/11 would be a good day to play this. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to keep you abreast of the fact that we got 15 minutes left of live show.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Well, I'll do this real quick. It's about 6 minutes, but I think it's important for us to hear this today.
Good day to you, America. For over 235 years, American men and women have served our country with great honor. From the Revolutionary War to the present day Iraq-Afghanistan War, this story is to honor all of those who have served America. For myself, I say thank you and God bless all of you. At a time when our president and other politicians tend to apologize for our country's prior actions, here is a refresher on how some of our former patriots handled negative comments about our country. In JFK's time, Secretary of State Dean Rusk was in France in the early 1960s when de Gaulle decided to pull out of NATO. De Gaulle said he wanted all U.S. military out of France as soon as possible. Rusk responded, "Does that include those who are buried here?" De Gaulle did not respond. You could have heard a pin drop. When in England, at a fairly large conference, Colin Powell was asked by the Archbishop of Canterbury if our plans for Iraq were just an example of empire building by George Bush. He answered by saying, "Over the years, the United States have sent many of its fine young men and women into great peril to fight for freedom, well beyond our borders. The only amount of land we have ever asked for in return is enough to bury those who did not return home." You could have heard a pin drop. There was a conference in France where a large number of international engineers were taking part, including French and American. During the break, one of the French engineers came back into the room saying, "Have you heard the latest dumb stunt Bush has done? He sent an aircraft carrier to Indonesia to help tsunami victims. What does he intend to do, bomb them?" A Boeing engineer stood up and replied quietly, "Our carriers have 3 hospitals on board that can treat several hundred people. They are nuclear powered and can supply electrical energy power to the shore facilities. They have 3 cafeterias with the capacity to feed 3,000 people 3 meals a day, and they can produce several thousand gallons of fresh water from seawater each day, and they carry a half dozen helicopters for use in transporting victims and injured to and from their flight decks. We have 11 such ships. How many does France have?" You could have heard a pin drop. A U.S. Navy admiral was attending a naval conference that included admirals from America, England, Canada, Australia, and a French naval admiral. They were at a cocktail reception. The American admiral found himself standing with a large group of officers that included personnel from most of those countries. Everyone was chatting away in English, as they sipped their drinks, but a French admiral suddenly complained that whereas Europeans learn many languages, Americans learn only English. He then asked, why is it we always have to speak English at these conferences rather than speaking French? Without hesitation, the American admiral replied, maybe it is because the Brits, the Canadians, Aussies, and the Americans arranged it so you wouldn't have to speak German. You could have heard a pin drop. And this story fits right in with the above. Robert Whiting, an elderly gentleman of 83, he arrived in Paris by airplane. At French customs, he took a few minutes to locate his passport. It was in his carry-on. Sir, you have been in France before, Monsignor, the customs officer asked sarcastically. Mr. Whiting admitted that he had been in France previously. Then you should know enough to have your passport ready. The American said, the last time I was here, I did not have to show it. Impossible. Americans always have to show their passports upon arrival in France. The senior American said, he gave the Frenchman a long, hard look. Then he quietly explained, well, when I came ashore at Omaha Beach on D-Day in 1944 to help liberate this country, I couldn't find a single Frenchman to show my passport to. You could have heard a pin drop. Now, I am a proud American, and I am extremely proud of the men and women who serve our country today, who have served our country. I say God bless you, your friends, and your family, and thank you for the service to our country, the United States of America.
That's a pretty cool clip.
Yes, so I've been wanting to play that for a little bit and tonight. And if anyone would like to chime in that in the little bit of time we have left, go ahead.
Give her hell, boys.
Well, the one thing that I will say.
No, go ahead, Rex. I was just saying it said everything there was to say.
Well, I'll put one caveat in there, and this is where a lot of people, especially conservative-minded people, would have some difficulty with some of the things that we talked about tonight. Having raised objections as to the misuse of our military might on behalf of oligarchic interests, corporatists, and corporations, does not in any way take away from the great patriotism that an honor that our veterans show. Those who serve in our military are wonderful people, and they need to be respected. Now, how our military is used is a different issue. So when we criticize the wars, the assault on other sovereign people, on the casualties and fatalities that are caused to our fine military men and women in causes that are not necessarily just. It doesn't take away from the reason that they signed up for our armed forces and the great work that they do. So I think that sometimes when we criticize these things, some people take it as to, you know, you're criticizing the military, you're against our military. Well, you know, I'm against the way our military is used. I'm against the way our country is being used. I'm against the way that things have gone wrong. But that doesn't change the fact that most people who go into our military serve with honor and they deserve our respect. And when I talk about the fact that 9/11 was a military failure, that doesn't in any way take away from the tragic loss of life that did occur. So, you know, sometimes we tend to put things into, you know, one basket or another, and things aren't always that clear. You have to be able to dissect things and criticize that which is wrong without denigrating that which is right. And I think that's a very important point to make, especially on this day.
Yes, sir. Gene, and then I'll call it out.
Chris. I mean, Rex, thank you.
Rex. Now we're starting to sound like...
you know, you said a mouthful there. Like I said, when I first started to speak, you know, in no way was saying that Osama bin Laden won. I felt being unpatriotic. I felt that, you know, the facts are facts. And like you said, when our military go and follow their orders to go places and do things that we may deem them as flexing their muscle or the U.S. government flexing its muscle, should not take away at all from the military and anyone. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And my you know, I can tell you guys, you know, I mean, you know, some of you know my story. I have one son that at 14 years old had a cardiac arrest, wiped his brain out. So we had a full care handicapped son 24/7. I had another son, Lucas, who's online here, sits down in front of us one day and says, "I just joined the Army." And, you know, so you know that feeling as a parent, you know, of wow. And the reason he joined, he wrote this great piece, and maybe we can find it again and post it, of why he joined. And it was, you know, something that I think we put on Facebook and stuff and just got massive amounts of, you know, likes and response, because it was because of the home he was raised in and the things that we talked about and how we raised our children and how we spoke and believed in our country. So I definitely do not want, you know, and he served his two tours, I think 30 months in Iraq, and you know, came home. He's not totally disabled, but he's, you know, he's got his, he's paid his price. Let's put it that way. And he did it because he believes in his country. And, you know, so I don't want to sound bad when we get all negative. I'm a pro military, you know, I live in like a subdivision. I mean, there must be thousands of guns around me. It's all, you know, active and retired military. I feel safe. And I love it because I love the people, I love the patriotism, I love how they think, you know, because it's the America I grew up with. You know, it's just, to me, it's just a natural setting. But one thing I want to add to this that's really important is his first tour he went over there, they were proud. By the time the second tour happened, he said it was so bizarre because it was like the whole culture of our country had changed. And it was that feeling like, why am I here? Nobody respects us. Our government hates us. I can't even pull the trigger on an enemy, otherwise I'll spend 5 hours writing reports. Everything changed, you know, as this next administration came in. And so things have changed, and it's going to continue to change. And this is something I tell all my fearful Romney supporters. You don't understand. All the things that have been set in place for the last decade or more, you know, from Bush to Obama, there's so many things in motion. One guy, a manager, is not going to fix these problems. And putting all your hope in him, who has his own, in my opinion, has his own agenda anyway. You know, I mean, I was a new guy. And I was a new guy because when I listened to his plan, I knew he got all of it. Doesn't mean he's right on everything. No man's right on everything. But he got all of it. He got the economy. He knew how to work with Congress. He knew how to work with split Congresses. He knew, he understood foreign policy. He's a senior instructor for, what, 30 years, training generals and naval admirals on history and war and understanding foreign policy. He worked through the Cold War with Reagan. He had a plan that was extremely thorough, whether you agree with him or not on certain policies and stuff. That gave me confidence, you know, to view that guy. Now I don't have confidence. I don't think anybody's going to walk in there and fix crap.
Well, we need to go get ahead. We only have a little over a minute to go, folks. So I have to, unfortunately, close this out for tonight. And these are definitely discussions that we'll be having in future shows.
Thursday,
yeah,
Rob.
We can talk about state authority and state sovereignty. And I hope to invite or like to invite everyone to come and listen to the show. Chris will be here, and I know Kelly Mordecai will be here, and as well as others. So thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. Let's keep the folks who are all affected very personally from 9/11 in our thoughts for the rest of the evening. And thank you once again, everyone in the chat, and for those of you who are going to be listening on the archives, you listen to it through. Thank you very much. Everyone have a good night and take care, and I will talk to you later.
Good night.
Thank you.